Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and this is Beta. Jimmy O. Yang is a stand-up comedian and an actor. You might know him as the app developer on HBO's hit comedy series, Silicon Valley. He's written a book called How to American, an immigrant's guide to disappointing your parents. Jimmy became a U.S. citizen in 2015. His first trip outside the U.S. as an American citizen was to my old stomping grounds, Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. It was for a weekend stand-up comedy stint at Rumors Comedy Club. Jimmy was opening up for Sean Wayans.
Yeah, I was there for a whole weekend. We ended up doing 9 shows. So the story goes that I had my American passport. I was very confident going through the Canadian border. And then they asked you, are you here for business or pleasure? So I thought it would be easier if I just said pleasure.
Why? Because you thought it would be less bureaucratic? It would be easier?
Yeah, less bureaucratic, or I don't have to fill out paperwork or whatever. And then she caught me. She was like, nobody comes to Winnipeg to have fun. You're definitely not here for pleasure. And then I got busted.
Yeah, yeah. I have this theory that I think the most stressful job in the world is being the director of tourism for Winnipeg. Because who wants to go to visit there? Who wants to go visit there? Even the people who live in Winnipeg are taking as many vacations as they can to get to so that they can actually live rather than just exist. You don't live in Winnipeg. You exist.
I didn't know there's like a whole reputation around Winnipeg. I thought it was just my experience.
No, it's not just yours. And my wife, who's born and raised in Winnipeg, and part of the reason I had to spend so many years there, was she hates it. She hates it more than anyone probably because she had to grow up there. Another thing that really resonated with me in your book is early on you say that you've always felt like an outsider, even as a Chinese kid growing up in Hong Kong. Why? What do you mean?
Well, so Hong Kong used to be a British colony, has its own government and things like that. And my parents are from Shanghai, from mainland China. Hong Kong even has its own dialect. Most of China speaks Mandarin, and then there's local dialects, like my family speaks Shanghainese. So my parents spoke Cantonese, which is the Hong Kong dialect, with a Shanghainese accent. And they used to always make fun of him, like make fun of my dad, like he's a mainland guy, and then they'll make fun of me like I'm the Shanghai boy. So even we're kind of technically in the same country, but it's still a different place that's Hong Kong. So that was like some early lessons in like assimilation because I was not the Hong Kong kid, really, even though I was born and raised there.
How difficult was that when you first arrived?
That was kind of crazy, man. I guess when I was going through it, I wasn't thinking about it. I was just kind of living it day by day. But it just challenges every day, Moving here, first of all, you lost all your friends that you've made from age 1 to 13 in Hong Kong. And this was before FaceTime, before Skype. So you had to long-distance call them, which is very hard, and then we lost touch. Yeah. And then you got to try to make new friends and try to learn a new language and really try to fit into a new culture. So it was very difficult. And just step by step, I try to make myself as American as possible, and a lot of it I learned from watching television,
especially black entertainment television, right? Can you tell me about that, the kind of stuff you watched there that helped you to learn English?
So BET obviously wasn't a thing in China, and hip-hop wasn't really a thing, neither was stand-up comedy. So when I saw BET Rhapsody and BET Comic View, it was just like these new art forms, and everybody seemed so like having so much fun, and it's so animated and cool. And it was like, to me, that was the coolest thing of America when I watched like Jay-Z's Big Pimpin' music video. And that was like the version of America that I looked up to, that I wanted. So I really started emulating that, and I learned a lot of English language and culture from, BET.
Yeah. Now, you attended UC San Diego, and Mike Judge, who at that time was known primarily for being the creator of Beavis and Butthead, he gave the commencement address at your graduation ceremony because he was a UCSD grad. What impact did his speech have on you?
It was a pretty big impact, I think, because my parents growing up, my dad used to always tell me, pursuing what you love is how you become homeless.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Very old-school Chinese parent mentality. Well, I'm sure a lot of parents are like that, too. So Mike's speech was about how he was a physics major, graduated in UCSD, like I was about to, and he hated it. And then he eventually, found his passion in comedy and became the success that he is now. So just seeing like a real-life specimen, an example that kind of went through what I went through in the same shoes that I was in, making it, it's like, oh my God, this is possible. Just seeing that possibility, I think, is so important.
Yeah.
I think mentoring people, half of the battle is just showing them an example that, oh my God, this guy did it, and he's just like a normal guy.
Yeah. That it can be but done, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it can be done. And it's not like he's 7 feet tall or he looks like he's built like LeBron James.
Yeah.
No, he's just a regular dude, and he did it. So for me, that kind of gave me, you know, the courage and kind of like permission that I needed to, you know, quit an internship that I hated in economics and finance,
mm-hmm.
and trying to really pursue what I wanted to do.
Yeah, so that was a real life-changing moment.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, 5-6 years later, he was the one that gave me my big break, and he had no idea I was sitting in that audience. So it was a pretty special journey.
So you decided to try stand-up. I'm curious, did pursuing a career as a stand-up comedian help you deal with feeling like an outsider here in America, in the sense that comedians tend to be outsiders themselves, and so there was this sense of belonging and community among you and your fellow comedians?
Yeah, I think it was like the first time I really felt like I really fit in, especially mm-hmm. in America, because even high school, let's not even just talk about race, because race, like, you know, I always felt like, do I really fit in the Asian community? Or do I fit in more in the hip-hop community like that? Or am I Asian enough for the Asian community? Or am I Americanized enough for the American-born Asian communities, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I found stand-up comedy, I realized these are all the misfits. These are all the people that didn't fit in, and they all fit in now in stand-up comedy because we didn't fit in. So that was a very special community that I found of a bunch of misfits.
Yeah, yeah. Can you tell me a bit about your early stand-up comedy? What kinds of things did you talk about?
Oh, it was horrible. It was every hack new open micer talked about the same thing, right? Like,
yeah.
your race in a very hackney way, stuff like that. And you just try to survive that 5 minutes on stage and get a laugh, you know?
My dad is actually like a really nice guy, but he comes off wrong all the time because he's too honest, you know? Like, you guys know those people are just too honest. Like, before every one of my high school basketball games, he gave me like this pep talk. But it always came out wrong because it was just way too honest. He's like, Jimmy, you're going to play well tonight, okay? Even though you're only 5'5", you're slow as hell, and you're the weakest guy on your team. I believe in you. Now, Jimmy, shoot the ball with confidence. But don't shoot that much because your shot is horrible. Now pass to that black kid. He's a lot better than you.
Then a few years back, I guess we're talking 5 years back, 6 years back, you crossed paths with Mike Judge again. Tell me about that.
Yeah. Yeah, so he obviously created Silicon Valley 5 years after that commencement speech. And he casted me, and that was like the big break in my career, I would think. You know, that's where probably people know of me from. And, yeah, he didn't know. He just saw my tape through an audition tape. He didn't know I went to UCSD. He didn't know I was sitting there in a commencement speech, and he casted me, man. And, and I told him the first day of table read, I was like, yo, you were the guy that was at my commencement speech that really kind of inspired me to do this. And now we became really close friends, and he's just a really down-to-earth, awesome guy. So kind of cool how that story kind of came around.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, like something out of a Hollywood film, out of a screenplay. And tell me a bit about the character you play on Silicon Valley.
Yeah, so it's called Jing Yang, and he's an immigrant just like myself. I always felt like whenever I'm playing Jing Yang, I'm playing a version of myself 15 years ago.
Mm.
And the kind of cool thing about Jing Yang is he's in a bit like, okay, he has an accent. You know, on the surface, he might just seem like a stereotypical Chinese immigrant programmer. But really, as the show progresses, especially this season, he became like kind of a villain almost, and I had a lot of fun playing that.
Yeah, and you had a lot of scenes with T.J. Miller, who's no longer on the show, and the two of you have been compared to Laurel and Hardy. What do you think of that comparison?
I love it.
Yeah.
You know, that's such a dynamic, classic duel, and something with me and T.J., just like the modern-day version of that, completely just worked out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's like that big guy, and I'm like that little kind of innocent guy, but somehow we love each other, but we also hate each other, and we always just throw jabs at each other. And I think the audience really liked that relationship.
What if I told you there is an app?
Jing Yang, this is the assistant. We wait for the boss to pitch. The woman you saw outside, okay?
Oh, the lady who was smoking. You said a note.
Oh, sorry. Monica was smoking? Cigarettes?
Cigarettes.
No. He's confused. He's Chinese. Jin Yang, what are you doing? This is Palo Alto. You people are lunatics about smoking here. We don't enjoy all the freedoms that you have in China, right? Where people smoke all the time.
I don't smoke, except for special occasions.
So you do smoke. Wait, have you been smoking in my house?
No. There's no special occasion ever happen in your house.
There's a funness behind it, and, yeah. And I think that's what the audience gravitated towards, and it's just kind of awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So now you're an American citizen. I'm curious, has becoming an American citizen, has that changed the way you view yourself and your identity in any way?
Not really. Mm-hmm. It was a nice honor and a stamp to be an American citizen. So it's like, it's a good moment, right?
Sure.
But at the same time, I say this in my stand-up, nothing's changed. People still see me as an Asian person.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Asian American at best. But nobody ever look at me in any part of the world and be like, look at him, look at his cool passport. He's American.
Yeah.
You know, no.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that nothing has changed, because I'm curious about your stand-up comedy. If it's evolved in any way since you became an American citizen, because I'm wondering if you think it will evolve now because you've been in the U.S. for a while and you've become more assimilated and you won't see as many differences between your life in Hong Kong and your life here in America. Will your stand-up start becoming less personal, or am I wrong? Do you think that's not going to happen?
Well, the evolution of the stand-up, it's a slow evolution, right?
Right.
It's not like I got an American passport and I turned into a evolved Pokemon, like I went to a different form. It's not that.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's a slow growth that every artist goes through. You know, you grow more and more as you grow as a person, you grow as a stand-up. You know, and whatever experience I went through, almost getting deported from Winnipeg, you know, lying to the border security.
Yeah.
You know, that's an experience I can talk about now, and that makes me feel a certain way, and that reminds me that, oh, you know what, when the Border Patrol officer said you can go, we'll kick you back to where you came from, it don't mean China this time, it means America, and that, in a weird way, feels kind of good, you know? So experiences like that helps you grow, and I don't think it's just a passport itself, you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah, very well said. What's next for you? You've done so much, and you're still very young. Like, what's next for you? Do you want to write? Do you want to direct? You know?
Yeah, I think I want to do all that, man. I think that's what's fun about this business. It's whatever you want to create, hopefully you can make it happen. This book is part of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm going back to doing more stand-up. I'm writing a couple of scripts, and I want to turn this book into a TV show. I think that's very exciting for me.
That would be a great idea, yeah. And I was wondering, I was going to ask you if I could possibly interest you in a starring role in this new sitcom I'm developing. It's called You Must Be Trippin'. And you would play Jimmy M. Chang, the director of tourism in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. And you're stressed out because you've got the most stressful job in the world. Can I send you a script?
That's a really funny idea. I love it.
Yeah, thank you. And we wouldn't have to film. If you're interested, I know you're busy with stuff and you want to do your own stuff, we could make sure that you wouldn't have to film it in Winnipeg. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that would be the main concern, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so a final question, Jimmy. In the epilogue of your book, you say that you hit the lottery in life to have the parents that you have. Has your dad ever said anything like really poignant and touching along those lines to you?
I think, you know, he give it up every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's always more special when he gives it up. I just wrote this article for the New York Times about, you know, the American custom of saying, I love you a little too much.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm having lunch with a buddy that I haven't seen in 2 years, and I would say, I love you, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't mean anything, you know? But in the Asian culture, we don't really say it, but when we do say it, it means so much. Now, my dad still hasn't said that to me, but sometimes he'll say, I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
And that means so much. And even though it's understood, it just feels good to hear it, you know, from him. At the end, you know, he means well, and he loves me.
Jimmy O. Yang is an actor, a comedian, and the author of How to American, An Immigrant's Guide to Disappointing Your Parents.